thank you very much. So first of all, I'm really happy to be here and have the opportunity to talk. So what I want to address here in this talk is the computation, the perturbative computation of the spectra in gauge theories with gravity duals at four loops and beyond. And this is mainly really a Feynman graph analysis, but with some input from integrability. So the work here is, the talk is based on the papers here together with Alessandro Torrielli, and then later with Francesco Fiamberti, Alberto Sant'Ambrogio, and Daniela Zanon, and finally also with Joe Minahan and Olof Olsen-Sachs. So let me first start with the outline. So I will spend a significant amount of time for motivation, meaning that I will start very elementary with some aspect of the idea of CFD correspondence, and then I want to motivate why it is important to really do especially four loop analysis. So why do you have to go to so high loop orders, and what is interesting to learn about it? Then I will summarize our four loop computation of the anomalous dimension of the Konishi operator. I will comment then on results beyond four loops, which we have obtained, and then I will come to the recent formulated ABJM correspondence of last year, and I will comment here how one can fix the four loop spectrum by a perturbative calculation. And then finally, I will conclude and give an outlook. So let me start really very elementary. So what I have written down here, this box is supposed to be a 10-dimensional space-time of string theory, and there exist solutions in which one has this four-dimensional hypersurfaces, which have Minkowski signature. So you have six transverse directions, parameterized by a radial coordinate and five spherical coordinates. And interesting, the interesting aspect found by Madasena is if you focus now into the near horizon region here, too close to these d-branes, where the space-time, so you have a curved space-time in that region, and the curved space-time is given by an under de Sitter space, a five-dimensional one times a five-sphere, where in under de Sitter space you have a characteristic curvature radius here, and you have a radial coordinate here, which is the distance from the brains. So this gives the name to the ADS part of the ADS CFT correspondence. And now there is a description of this region in terms of open strings. That means strings that stretch between these d-branes here, and closed strings which live in the bulk of this region. And these two descriptions are supposed to be equivalent, so you should have the same physics from them. And the descriptions are given here. So on the closed string side, you have type 2B string theory on this ADS 5 times 5 background, and you have certain flux component, n of these flux components switched on, and this n is related to the number of d-branes from which you started. The parameter on that side are the curvature radius of the space. You have the string length, and you have the string coupling constant ES. In the low energy description of the open strings here living on these d-branes is given by SUN supersymmetric Yamil's theory. So in this case, you have n equal 4 extended supersymmetries, meaning that your multiplet is given by a gauge field. You have 4 fermions and 6 real scalars in the theory. And the parameters here are again this parameter n here, which is related to the rank here of the gauge group, and you have the Yamil's coupling constant. So if these two theories should describe the same physics, you should match the parameter. And the description is that the string coupling constant should be given by the Yamil's coupling constant squared. And the dimensions quantity which you can form from the curvature radius of ADS and of the, from the string length is this quantity lambda here. And this is the famous Toft coupling. So this is the fixed combination G Yamil squared times n. So now, I want to discuss this correspondence in a certain limit, namely at large n. So I take a huge number of d-branes. Then there is a double expansion for the Feynman graphs, and this idea goes back to Toft. Namely, I rearrange the Yamil's coupling constant square as this so-called Toft coupling, and it absorbs one factor of n. Then I have a double expansion, not only in this coupling n, but also in terms of powers of of the number of d-branes from which I started, with some exponent chi here, and chi is the Euler number given by the number of vertices minus number of propagators plus number of index loops of a given Feynman diagram. So what I mean by number of index loops here is the following. All the fields are in the adjoint representation. So a single, for example, scalar propagator is now replaced by a double line here in this form, and each of the line represents one fundamental index. And the same I do here for the four vertices, for the three vertices of the theory, and so on. So then, if I go to my Feynman diagram description, I have here a simple four vertex, and I pairwise contract the legs here, just as an example, with two propagators. So the number of vertices is one, the number of propagators is two, and now the fun starts because there's the expansion in powers of n. The first term that I can write down is this diagram here. So in this case, there are three of these closed blue loops, and this is precisely the number of index loops you find here. So what you get from here is that the Euler number, inserting it in this formula, is 2. So the first term goes with n square. Then there are a bunch of other diagrams, and for example, one of them is this one. So here, the contraction is so that the loop, the blue one, if you follow this blue line, it just gives you a single index loop. So this loop here really goes back to itself, as you see. So that means that here the Euler number is given by 0, and this diagram is suppressed if I take n strictly to infinity. There is another quantity here appearing in the Euler number, namely it can be defined as 2 minus 2 times the number of Hendels. And you see the number of Hendels in the first case is 0, in the second case is 1. And what I mean by this is if you take this diagram or this diagram, and you draw it on a Riemann surface with this number of Hendels, then the crossings can be resolved. There are no crossings anymore. So that means this guy can be drawn in a plane or on a sphere, and this on a torus, without crossings. And what I will concentrate in is only on this planar diagram, so only on diagrams of this type here. So now we have under control the limit and the parameters, and we should find out what we can match to each other. So we want, for example, to match the spectra. So what are the spectras in both theory? For this, I have written down here again the ADS part and the sphere. The ADS part has an isometry group which is given by SO2,4, and the sphere is given, the isometry is given by SO6. So these are symmetries manifest in the string theory. On the other hand, I have the gauge theory here. So you should ask, what are the symmetries here? And it turns out that this SO6 is precisely the R charge which rotates the supersymmetric generators. So this is part of the supersymmetry, so to say. And the SO2,4 symmetry you see here is the conformal symmetry in four dimensions. So this gives you the answer that n equal 4 superelements theory is in fact a superconformal theory. And the charges I have to my disposition now to classify states, which I can match, is the energy, namely the Cardan generator of this bosonic subgroup here, is the energy, two spins in under the Sitter space, and here three spins on the sphere part. And now I can start to construct solutions with certain limits. So for example, in the string theory side, I can first look to very large value of the Toft coupling and very large spin. Then I can describe classical strings on this background in this limit. So meaning that, for example, I can look to a solution which just rotates here in the time direction. So the time in IDS is given by this cycle. And it rotates in one of the spin directions here in anti de Sitter space. So the string starts stretching inside of anti de Sitter space. This is a solution which was obtained by Gupta, Klever, and Polyakov here. And if you expand the energy now as a function of the coupling here and of the charges, in the regime where the charges are smaller than the coupling, then you see that it starts linearly in the charge, and then there is a correction in terms of the charge divided by the coupling with some function f of lambda here in front. So this is the spin state, the string state. So now we should look to the what is the corresponding operator on the Young-Mills theory side, which should match with the state. So the matching here is that you should look to the anomalous, or so the full dimension of this operator, which should be identified with the energy of the corresponding spring state. So the operator should have the same charges here. In that case, it is given by two of the scalar fields, and then you have a certain number of covariant derivatives which you insert in this trace over gauge group indices. And the number is S1, so to get the charge right. So this is one possibility. Then there is the possibility, of course, that you to look to a simple solution which is not stretched at all. So in this case, we have a point-like string which rotates in ADS, and the center of mass rotates here in the 5-sphere. So in this case, the classical energy is just given by the charge itself, and there are, at that point, no corrections, meaning that on the gauge theory side, we'll find a protected operator. So which is exactly given by the dimension equal to the bare dimension, and the bare dimension is given by the number of elementary scalars here, where this scalar Z corresponds to rotations in the plane, which corresponds here to the angular momentum J3. So now one can do the following. One can perturb the state and insert different types of scalars into this trace. And what happens in this case is we break the demand here that the charges are large compared to one, so we have to include quantum corrections on the string side. And if you do this, then you see that the energy is corrected. It starts again with J3, and then there are, if you expand the square root formula, it gets an additional contribution of 2, which correspond to the bare dimension of the two scalars, and then there are corrections in terms of the Toft coupling. So meaning that here, this state should now get an anomalous dimension, so a correction to the bare dimension. And this you can compute perturbatively in Feynman graphs. And finally, let me also mention that there are string states which, for example, stretch. They still point like in under the Sitter space, and they stretch in two directions in the sphere because you rotate the string now around its center of mass in two independent planes. So and in this case, the energy, again, is a linear function of the angular momentum, where, for simplicity, I take the angular momentum equal now. And then the corresponding gauge theory state would be given by this here. So x and y are still scalars, but now are the complex combinations of scalars which corresponds to the rotation directions around J1 and J2. So this is now the mapping. And what I want to describe a little bit in more detail is this case, namely of this function, which in QCD is known as the Casper anomalous dimension or universal scaling function. So how can we, or how is it possible to use this function to test ADS CFT? And on the other hand, then I want to comment on operators which are short, so which have two of these different scalars in their in the trace of over the color indices, and a charge J3 which is small. Okay. So for this, let me give you an overview of how this test of the correspondence look like. And first, I have to apologize here that I cannot put all relevant references, because otherwise I would fill up this page completely. So I try to get a snapshot of what happened till last year, till August last year, let's say. So here's again the ADS-CFT correspondence, and at strong coupling, as you have seen, we have under control the semi-classical string, so this has been done. And on the gauge theory side, at weak coupling, one can compute perturbatively the anomalous dimensions of these operators here. So the funny thing is that one can now really make a mapping, although you have strong and weak coupling regime here, namely one, it was found that both systems here, so the operator mixing here and the description of strings in this curved spacetime are given in terms of integrable systems. And what has been formulated here is so-called Beta-Ansätze, namely for the gauge and for the string theory independently first. And they seem to look very different. But it was found that there is a phase factor missing in the 2x2 particle scattering matrix here, which interpolates for you exactly between strong and weak coupling. So at the end, this is a unified description for the problem in total. So what has been done then is you can go to large spin. So now we look to this type of operators you see here at large spin, and it has been written down an integral equation for these Casper anomalous dimension or universal scaling function. And it was found that if you expand at strong coupling and at weak coupling, you find the respective answers you get from directly analyzing the strings or the gauge theory. So this is a strong test of ADS-CFT already, because this is a highly non-trivial fact that you get here the classical string answer plus the corrections, and here anomalous dimensions, so the corrections if you include loop corrections. So, but this is not the end of the story, because we have restricted ourselves to large spin now. What we want to do is, of course, we want to check the ADS-CFT correspondence also for finite spin. So in this case, one possibility is to look to the spin 2 case. In this case, the composite operator here, the random 1-1, appears here, and it has just two covariant derivatives inside of the trace, and it is part of a bigger multiplet, which in this case is the Konishi multiplet. So you start from this Konishi state here, and then taking four superchargings, you get as a descendant this one and also this state, which has four scalar fields. And the nice thing is that all the states in this multiplet must have the same anomalous part of the dimension. So supersymmetry tells that these and these and these have the same quantum correction, so you can analyze either this and this, and they should give the same answer. An important point now is, which I didn't tell you before, is that these beta ansätze here are asymptotic. And I mean by this that one can now use the beta ansätze to compute the anomalous dimension, for example, for this state. But asymptotic means only up to a certain order. Namely, the length of this state here is defined as the number of its scalar constituents, which is 4. So what you find is that the gauge beta ansatz gives the correct answer as long as the expansion of your anomalous dimension in terms of the Toft coupling is strictly smaller than 4. So up to 3 loops, you get the correct answer for this anomalous dimension, but to 4 loops, you don't. And so you now see why the 4-loop analysis is important, because this is the first non-trivial step beyond this asymptoticity here. So what has been done then to make this matching is one has to understand what means a small spin. And small spin here on the gauge theory side, on the string theory side, means that you have to include corrections due to the fact that your string world sheet is not an infinite plane, but it is a cylinder. So this can be formulated in terms of a thermodynamic beta ansatz or in generalized Lüscher formula, and the result was found first by Beinock and Janik at weak coupling. So they found that the anomalous dimension here for the Konishi operator is the asymptotic one, and the four-loop correction is then determined by analyzing this Lüscher formula. So what we have done instead is we wanted to understand this wrapping problem or this finite size problem from the gauge theory side. So in this case, we have to include the so-called wrapping interactions, and this is something I will comment on a little bit more. And then, a little bit later, we were able to do the four-loop Feynman graph analysis of the corresponding corrections. So, and we found the same quantity here at four loops. So meaning this is the first, if you want, non-trivial test beyond the asymptotic limit that ADS-CFT works quite well. Okay. So the second thing, and I probably don't have time to comment on this in detail, but since it is related from the ideas, I wanted to show here, namely in the so-called AVJM correspondence. So in this case, there is a different kind of string theory, underlying string theory. Yes. Sorry. Yes.
There is also why didn't you comment on the claim? Integrable, of Kazakov and friends, that they have a full answer period.
Yeah, the Y system, right. Yeah, because, at that point, I wanted to make clear what the first test was, so I stopped at
the first test of,
it's true,
the
yes.
The second test of an asymptotic expansion, but presumably,
right.
There's a further development.
Right. Absolutely.
Not going to contradict them if you agree with them.
No, absolutely. Everything is, of course, consistent with the new Y system formulation up to now. That's right. Absolutely. So the second thing so I wanted to comment on is here the ABJM correspondence. And in this case, the gauge theory is three-dimensional n equals 6 from Simon's theory. So the picture you can write on is very similar to the other. So this is why I just put the slide here, with the one difference, namely, if you want to determine the energies from the integral of a system, so from these beta ansätze, then the dispersion relation for these magnons contains an unknown function here. So in principle, this could have been, this could have appeared also in RDS 5 times CFD4, but here by accident or by something that is not understood, it is just given by the coupling itself. So there is no non-trivial function that interpolates between strong and weak coupling. And this changes here in this correspondence. This function can be something non-trivial. And what has been found here is that at strong coupling, you have this function to start linearly in lambda, and then there are corrections. And at weak coupling, the two-loop analysis shows that it starts with lambda square. So there must be something non-trivial going on here. And what we did, we sat down and computed the for-loop correction to this function here. And it is given by this term. So what you can see here is the appearance of a zeta function. So there must be really something non-trivial going on, some function here, hopefully, that is a kind of quotient of gamma functions or something like this. And it would be very interesting to fix this from first principles somehow, because this equation is crucial to fix for you the asymptotic answer for the anomalous dimension, meaning if you know this function only to for-loop order, you can only get the gauge theory spectrum to for-loop order. And this was different in the ADS 5 times CFD4 correspondence, because since this function seems to be trivial, you have more or less the full asymptotic spectrum under control. So this is the difference. So let me now summarize a little bit why one should care about n equal 4 superangular theory in the first place, so in this setup. I mean, how can we make, for example, contact to something which is relevant for collider physics or something? So the first thing that is really remarkable is the Kotikoff-Lipatov transcendentality principle. And here they observed that the n equal 4 anomalous dimension should be part of the QCD anomalous dimension. So in fact, what they did, they used the next-to-next leading order non-singlet QCD splitting functions, which have been explicitly calculated by Mock, Marzen, and Vogt, and used this to extract the free-loop cusp anomalous dimension and the free-loop answer for the Kornishi operator from the QCD result. So there seems to be a connection that if you project out certain contributions from the QCD result, you get the n equal 4 result. On the other hand, you have all the business with scattering amplitudes. So in particular, here, the information about the structure of QCD amplitudes you might get from analyzing n equal 4. And here, the iteration formula for the MHV amplitudes has been used to fix the cusp anomalous dimension to 4 loops in n equal 4 superangulars. So these are some corrections. So in the summary of this could be that you say that n equal 4 superangulars theory is somehow the simplest theory to understand something about QCD. And the nice thing is here, due to ADS CFT, you have the strong coupling results available. You have some information about the QCD results, some subsectors or something like that, coming here from the fact that you have this principle. On the other hand, what you can now say, you could turn the argument here around and say, if we have the for-loop cusp anomalous dimension and the for-loop Kornishi anomalous dimension, can we predict parts of the next to leading order QCD result? So this could be interesting if people might be able to sit down and compute it, that one has some kind of consistency checks at least. So let me now come to the description of how we get the spectrum. So what does one have to do perturbatively? So first of all, let me remind you how the dimension comes in. So for this, I have here written a composite operator of length L, and this is given by this quadratic box here with L elementary fields, which in my case I simply say are scalars. And then I look now to two-point functions of such composite operators. So I have one of these functions here at position x, another at position y. And here I write explicitly the kernel of interactions, which in this case at tree level is trivial. So I put just the one here, meaning that between two operators here, I just contract all the elementary scalar fields with X-space propagators. And then going to a diagonal basis, I get just that these the answer is just the product of all the X-space propagators. So the anomalous dimension starts here with a number of fields. So if we switch on interactions, then this region here becomes non-trivial. So we have some interaction kernel V2L with 2L elementary external legs, which are now connected to the operator. And here inside, you have all kind of gluon exchanges, quartic four vertices, and things like this going on. And the effect of this is that this delta changes, and you get an additional contribution, small gamma, which is the anomalous dimension. So this can be understood by just the fact that the composite operators have to be renormalized. So in fact, there is a mixing now that mixes your bare operators with a mixing matrix here, which absorbs the divergences, which you get if you compute the Feynman diagrams here, into the basis of renormalized operators. And the quantity of interest here is the dilatation operator, which you get just by the standard definition of anomalous dimensions, namely the logarithmic derivative with respect to this mu here of the function z, which appears here, which is in fact matrix valued. So this is really an operator which acts on your states, on your composite operators now. And we can extract the anomalous dimensions by solving the eigenvalue problem by acting with the dilatation operator here on the composite operators and finding the eigenvalues. So, and the nice thing is at this point, integrability comes in. And for this, I want to restrict now to a very simple example. Namely, I want to look to the so-called flavor SU2 subsector, which in this case is given by the following. So I take my six real scalar fields, which I had in the theory, and I complexify them by pairing them. So you have seen this before. This is the field phi that appears before, and the field z that appeared before. And then I demand that this field psi here only appears internally in loops. So all the states that I can build up are now just words of phi and z fields. And then the picture is the following. So I have here the composite operator of length L, which is an element of the sector now. Here are the m elementary phi fields, and then I promote it to a length L object by putting the appropriate number of z fields. Then in addition, so okay, this is the first step. And this maps, because I have the cyclicity of the chain, so I can, of the trace here, so I can think of this object as a cyclic spin chain with a certain number of up spins and a certain number of down spins, where the down spins here are given by the phi fields, and the up spins are the z fields. So the protected operator, which is the BFPS operator you've seen before with only z fields, now maps to the ferromagnetic vacuum here. The impurities I have, so-called impurities, so these guys here, which then lead to non-trivial anomalous dimensions or energies, are spin excitations in this picture here, so they're just given here by these spin downs. The dilatation operator on the left-hand side becomes the Hamiltonian of this spin chain, and the anomalous dimension are just the eigenvalues of the Hamiltonian, so the energies. And this is up to now only a translation into a different formalism, of course, but there's nothing fundamental happened. The fundamental thing happens now by the observation that Hamiltonian starts at one loop with an integrable Hamiltonian of an XXX 1/2 Heisenberg chain. So the spin chain is in fact integrable, and this means you can use the tool of the so-called Bethe-Ansatz to diagonalize all the states and find the eigenvalues for the anomalous dimensions or the energies. So roughly the structure is the following. So I have here my impurities or magnons. Each magnon carries a certain momentum, and the Bethe equation, the first equation, tells you that the complete state should have momentum zero if I add all the magnon momenta from 1 to m for the magnons. The second equation is such an exponential here of the jth Magnum momentum, and then there appears a product which excludes just the jth one. So this means that I scatter now one magnon with all the other magnons, and I transport it once around this chain. And doing so, I get a phase factor given here. So these two equations determine for you the momentum. And all I have to do then is to insert this momentum into the magnon dispersion relation. And this gives the energy of the state as the energy of all individual magnon contributions. So the thing you see here in the second equation on the right-hand side is, in fact, the 2x2 scattering matrix of fundamental magnons. So you have two magnons coming in, two magnons coming out. And integrability here is at work because, in fact, all higher 3 and 4 and 5 magnon scattering processes factorize, like here, in 2x2 scattering processes. And I have split this matrix here in two parts because the first part, this part can be fixed by just the symmetries, the symmetry of the problem. So meaning this is the matrix part, and the other part is this what you have to see before, the dressing phase, which interpolates for you between strong and weak coupling. Okay. So let me now argue how you can come to the XXX1/2 Heisenberg spin chain. So for this, one should sit down and do the Feynman graph analysis. So this was first done by Minar and Saremba, and later two loops by Gross, Mikhailov, and Roiban. So here I use the component formulation, meaning that there is a scalar 4 vertex in the n equal 4 superangles theory. And here m and n just sums the flavor, which gives you the mixing between the different states. So if I write down this 4 vertex now if I represent it graphically, it looks like this. So the first part is I have a 4 vertex where the two flavor lines just pass by each other without affecting each other, and the second one has a crossing of flavor lines. So the Feynman diagrams are given here. So this is the one loop part with the 4 vertex, and these are just the insertions of these two contributions. And the composite operator is given as this line here, as a solid line here. Then you have, in addition, a gluon exchange diagram here, for example, and this is only flavor neutral, so it only contributes to the first part of here in the first component of the 4 vertex. And then I also have to take into account the self-energy contributions, and I have to sum up everything. And the answer has this structure, so it is given, if you sum it up, minus the identity operator in this flavor permutation space, plus the permutation, and the permutation here is this part, and it is inserted at all possible positions along the composite operator. So this is the Heisenberg Hamiltonian. So this is how it comes up. So what we did is we did not do components, but we went to superfields because the things simplify a little bit. In this case, you have in the Lagrangian, the chiral vertex, and it is cubic in the superfields now, and you have an antichiral vertex of this form. And there is an alternating structure of if you exchange flavors, so if you reflect the flavor structure, then there is a minus sign coming in. And this precisely leads to the fact that the scalar diagram, so the chiral diagram you write down here, has already the structure permutation identity minus permutation. So there is not this sum of different contributions. And this is, in fact, the only logarithmically divergent diagram at one loop that you write down. So the answer is encoded already in this single diagram. And what you have to do is the D-algebra. I don't want to go into detail here, but just tell you that finally you get a single one-loop integral, and the answer is, again, identity minus permutation. So this is, again, the Heisenberg Hamiltonian, just to motivate how at one loop this comes in this language. Okay. So let me now come to the problem of wrapping, why it comes in. So at one loop, the number of interacting legs you get from the Feynman diagrams is just nearest neighbor. So at higher loops, it happens that, for example, at K loops, there are K plus one nearest neighbor legs interacting with each other. And the composite operator is still of length L. So one should now ask, how does this dilatation operator act on a composite operator of length L? If L is strictly larger than the range of the interaction, then the prescription is just that you insert the possible Feynman diagrams, so the planar diagrams at all possible positions along the composite operator, and you sum this up. If the loop order becomes equal or bigger than the length of the composite operator, then there is, in this description, one leg which cannot be used. It either can lead to an internal loop, so you get an answer, a contribution that looks like this, or it can literally wrap around here this composite operator and lead to a new contribution. And this is something you don't get from the asymptotic integrability. So this is something that one has to take into account by Feynman graphs, for example. So here is now the summary of what we did. The first is you should analyze the properties of the wrapping interactions, in particular the symmetry properties and how you identify them with respect to all diagrams. The second is one should choose a formalism which allows you to compute them as efficiently as possible, and we here in that case choose the N=1 superfields. So then the third question is if one really has to sit down and compute all Feynman diagrams, or is there a way to avoid this? And the idea here is that one can use the known asymptotic dilatation operator and correct it so that on a length 4 state, it, so K is again loop order. So we want to compute, and L is also loop, is the length. So we want to compute the for loop correction to the length 4 state, meaning that we correct the for loop dilatation operator to apply it to a length 4 state. There are range 5 interactions which are not clear how to apply. So this is something that we are going to have to get rid of, and we have to correct this. So this is the next step. And the last step is that we have to compute the divergences of the loop integrals, if possible, analytically, and to find the result. So for this, we have used very efficient techniques in this case, which is the so-called Gegenbauer polynomial technique. It had to be modified to be applicable in this case very efficiently. And just to give you an example, we have some results up to 11 loops in the beta deformed theory. So that means if you just sit down and use the Gegenbauer polynomial X-phase technique, program it in a computer, you get around 40 million contributions. And this takes forever. So we started the program, and after 10 days or something, the Mathematica kernel crashed. So for a single integral, that was not doable. So at the end, there is a way to define these guys recursively, and that boils it down to that you have for this 11 loop integrals only 225,000 contributions. And this is a simplification that makes it possible to do it in one day, more or less.
So a 5 loop is essentially if you were to do this for Konishi,
yes,
knowing the full 5-loop calculation, could you put it on a computer?
The problem is there that we are beyond critical wrapping order. So all these calculations here, also at 11 loops, means that it's a length 11 state at 11 loops. But Konishi would be a length 4 state at 5 loops. And this, a lot of power, which a little bit I want to explain here in the next transparencies, which is necessary and only works in the case K equal L breaks down. So at the end, one is left with something that looks very hopeless. Yeah, unfortunately. But, okay, one should never give up hope completely. So, so the first thing I would like to do is a little bit commenting more on the nature of this wrapping interactions. So this is something probably not very common. So the picture one could have in mind is the following. So this is based on the work with Alessandro Torielli. I take a very simple example here of a length 3 state with this kind of interaction. So I have nearest neighbor interactions. Here I have one line that crosses the other lines. And I take a length 3 to make it simple. This is not the case in N=4, but just a simple example. So the genus expansion can be seen as follows. So you could either think of this gray region here as being expanded in the genus. So I write out a two-part function here and expand now in at h equals 0, 1, 2, and so on, at higher genus. So in this case, if you look to the grayscale region, all the diagrams in double line notation I've written down here, and there are a bunch more, which I don't look at, they all have a crossing of one line above, crossing the other lines. So you need at least one handle to resolve this crossing, so all of them will be genus 1 contributions with respect to this expansion. If you want to extract the planar anomalous dimensions from the two-point function, for example, you should look to the planar part of the two-point function. So the genus expansion should be done for the full two-point function and not for the kernel. So in this case, now I have to include the composite operators in the genus counting. And you see what happens in the last case. In the last case, the line which before was crossing the other lines now runs along, wraps around this composite operator. So the picture is the following. The integrability, the asymptotic integrability, gives you access to this quantity, which is the planar dilatation operator, or if you want, the planar kernel of this interaction. What you want is the planar anomalous dimensions, so meaning this object here. But there is a mixture from certain genus 1 contributions, which, if acted on a shorter state, become planar. So you get diagrams from this class appearing in this class. And this structure continues to higher genus orders. So this is how it appears. In particular, this is to say that the finite size effects in the planar limit are encoded in the genus 1 part of the of the expansion. So the second thing I wanted to comment on is how to avoid that one has to compute all Feynman diagrams. So here is the for loop dilatation operator, and the structure is the following. You need four loops, so you have several loops available by contracting with a composite operator, and then there are additional internal loops. So here, for example, there's one loop formed with a composite operator and three internal loops. Then you have next to nearest neighbor interaction and two internal loops. Next to nearest neighbor interaction, one internal loop, and you have these guys which have no internal loops, but all the loops are formed by contracting with the composite operator. And these are precisely the problematic states because they have five nearest neighbors which interact. So you don't know how to apply the D4 on a length 4 state. These diagrams are unwanted. So the idea is now that we subtract these diagrams from the complete answer, and we add the respective wrapping diagrams. So that avoids that we have to compute all these huge classes of diagrams which appear here and are restricted just to these two classes, which are very special, have a very special topology. Namely, if you cut out this operator, this is just a tree-level graph, and if you cut it out here, it is just the one-loop graph. So these are very special Feynman diagrams. And in fact, it becomes, fortunately, even easier because, the answer given from integrability here would contain just the flavor permutations. So what you see in the answer is how many lecs in flavor, in the flavor language, interact with each other. There are, though, diagrams which do not respect this length. So, for example, this diagram, it can have up to four interacting flavor lines, but the last line is connected to the rest of the diagram with a flavor-neutral gluon. So this diagram appears as a range 4 diagram, but it is range 5 with respect to the Feynman diagram, and so the integral, the loop integral, is wrong if you don't subtract these and correct by these kind of diagrams too. And the nice thing here is that we can prove that all these diagrams are either finite or cancel against each other. So it's possible to just take the for loop answer from the asymptotic integrability and to correct it by just subtracting or just canceling out all the range 5 diagrams, which are range 5 in flavor space. So and you don't make any mistake, fortunately. So this is enough. And then you have to compute the wrapping. So to give you an idea of how this looks like, this is the for loop dilatation operator in language of flavor permutations. So these objects, we had to introduce here are certain linear combinations of permutations and identities, and are made to make this description as close as possible to Feynman graphs. So the advantage here is that basically a single diagram here corresponds to a single Feynman diagram, apart from some gluon rearrangements. So now the to read of the longest range state is in this language means that you look to the arguments of this function chi, and you cancel out all those contributions which contain a 4. Because this means line 1 interacting with line 5. Okay, the range is one more than the argument of this function. So basically it's canceling this line, it's canceling these 2 lines and the last 4. So you sum up huge classes of Feynman diagrams by taking into account just this subset of the asymptotic dilatation operator. And the second thing I should say is that this is at for loop the first time that a non-rational coefficient appears in the prefactors. And this is due to the previously mentioned dressing phase here. So in fact, it is a zeta of 3 contributions that gets in here in the first time. Okay. So the next to do is to add the wrapping diagrams. And here are all diagrams we had to compute. So there are some of them that have just scalar lines, and then there are a bunch which have gluons and all the possible distributions of adding the gluons to this substructures. And then you do this D-algebra and all the do the loop integrals which appear here, and you sum up the result, and you're finished. So here's the answer. The corrected for-loop dilatation operator for an application to a length 4 state is this part is the subtracted part, so without the wrapping diagrams, and these contributions are the sum of all the wrapping diagrams. Then you take the non-vanishing eigenvalue of this guy, and that is the final answer. So you get a rational part, a zeta of 3 part, and the new zeta of 5 contribution, which did not appear before. So this is entirely, yes?
Do the wrappings violate this maximum transcendental
effect? No, not really, no. It's true that, okay, maybe this is not me. It's true that the zeta of 5 appears, but the maximum transcendentality principle you can best read off from the scaling function. And these quantities here, the integers that appear in front, they come from the harmonic sums which are not infinite. So that could, these are hidden harmonic sums, which could be, for example, transcendentality, what we have. At 4 loops, we need 8, 7. So this will be transcendentality 3 harmonic sums, which you don't see. Yeah. So but this guy is new. And what I want to argue now a little bit is the following statement, namely wrapping increases transcendentality, or in other words, the degree of the harmonic sums. So meaning that why is this term new, and without wrapping it doesn't appear. So if you go to a longer state. And the reason is the following. So here it is very useful to look through this Gegenbauer polynomial X-space technique method. I don't want to describe you in detail, but what I want to say is how you can see that the harmonic sums arise here. So the technique tells you that here's the composite operator at this point. So this is a range 5 contribution which we have to subtract. And the technique now says that if we sit on this point and we cut out all the propagators which are connected to it, then if the remaining diagram is open, it doesn't have any loops, then the pole part can only be rational in that case. So you get from this a rational contribution. The corresponding wrapping diagram we have to add is this one. So the composite operator sits here in the middle. These are the four lines of the composite operator. And if you cut out again this vertex with all the propagators, there's a loop remaining. And in this language of this formalism, a loop means one harmonic infinite series. So this immediately leads to zeta function. So here you see that in this simple case, you see already an increase from transcendentality to transcendentality 3. And a little bit more complicated are things if you go to gluon diagrams. In this case, you find something that connects from here to here and here to here. So you see that transcendentality can really be increased to 5. And the second thing I wanted to argue is, or motivate, is that dressing and wrapping are kind of similar. Not only that the first time here zeta functions appear in both cases, but if you look
to the diagram,
which is the easiest one to get this dressing factor from the diagrammatic analysis, it's this guy. And here, the corresponding wrapping diagram, which you have to add, is this one. Namely, it's just a cyclic rotation of the outstates with respect to the instates. The diagram is the same. So maybe it gives the same contribution. So this diagram has the effect of doubling the coefficient of this one if you do wrapping. So in sense, it's the correction of the dressing and wrapping is very similar. The diagrams have the same topology. If you cut out the composite operator, you are left with one loop, which is the same here for this wrapping diagrams. Yeah.
So can you think of a modification of the dressing factor that will account for the wrapping effects? So then you can still apply an asymptotic wave on size, but you include the finite volume.
Yeah. I mean, effectively, this
that's
should.
What you're essentially
yeah, saying. Yeah. But this would mean that the dressing factor then becomes explicit length dependent, of course. I mean, this is maybe it's an effective description. I don't think that this is the most natural way to describe it. But for sure, one could collect it in the dressing factor, but with a price to pay a length dependent, because this continues to higher orders. I mean, so, which brings me now to the summary. So here's the for loop result for the Konishi operator you have seen before, and this matches perfectly with the result from the string integrable model, where they, as you mentioned before, have now also available a five loop result. And it is all consistent with the Y system. I mean, this new development one should take into account. So the next thing is that we cannot do the supercritical, so the one loop higher five loop Konishi. The best we could do at the moment is to go to a length 5 state at 5 loops. And the answer is this. So you see that, again, at loop, one loop order more increases for you the transcendentality. And this diagram is, again, this contribution is entirely due to wrapping. So again, wrapping brings you from zeta of 5, which is the contribution of the dressing phase at 5 loop, to zeta of 7. And this, again, matches result from the string integrable model. So it's consistent with the other analysis. And finally, I should say that we have now results available up to 11 loops. And this is only possible if one goes to the so-called beta deformed theory, in which operators with a single impurity are no longer protected. In this case, the funny thing is that the number of Feynman diagrams in the critical wrapping order just increases linearly with the loop order. So this is why one can go to 11 loops. Otherwise, it would be completely impossible. And the limitation here, in fact, is now the integrals. So this 225,000 contributions you have seen before is fine on a PC, and one could for sure push it further on other computers, so to go to 12, 13, and so on loops. But there is a limitation for getting the integrals, because this blows up exponentially. There is not really a good way to do the better. I mean, up to now, we haven't found any. So we hope that there might be one, but one doesn't know. So, and also, this result matched the result from the string integrable model. So this is the summary of this part. Then let me come to the for loop spectrum in the ABJM correspondence. And here I will be very sketchy now. So we look to the three-dimensional n equals 6 superconformal transign theory. And there is also something like a subsector, namely the flavor SU2 times SU2 subsector in this case. So in this case, we did an analysis of the Feynman graphs. And we want to compute the for-loop contribution to this function here, which is, as you've seen before, this is the Magnus dispersion relation, so which in the beta ansatz is essential for determining the energies or anomalous dimensions. The type of diagrams you have to compute in this case is one certain class. It's all diagrams which have two internal loops and two loops formed with a composite operator. And this, it is enough to restrict yourself to the ones which have genuine flavor permutations. So this reduces the class further. What we have done in this case is we have check the superconformal symmetry at two loops, which means just if you look to all the diagrams which appear without the composite operator, to have an idea if we do the right thing, if we have the right Feynman rules and so on. Then we have explicitly checked the double pole cancellations at four loops, which is another consistency check, so in the logarithm of the randomization constant, to know that you have not missed any diagram. I mean, it's not sufficient, but it is one condition, one check one can do. And finally, we've also computed the four-loop wrapping correction and compared it with the result from the Y system. And again, there is matching. So it seems that we have under control very well our analysis. So in this case, what remains is this bunch of diagrams to compute. So I don't want to go into detail here, just say that the tedious thing here is that you have certain substructures which appear and that themselves are one or two loop subdiagrams. So this is then around 150 diagrams you have to compute at the very end. So let me now come to the conclusion. So what I have presented here in the talk was that finite size effects correspond to wrapping interactions, and this is a genus-changing effect. So you can understand that finite size effects are encoded in the genus 1 contributions of the dilatation operator. Then this led to the first computation of the four-loop anomalous dimension of the Konishi operator, and then to the first test beyond the asymptotic limit if you include the string result. I have argued that wrapping increases transcendentality and that all the results confirm the duality up to now. And then in the ADS-4-CFT3 correspondence, I very sketchy presented how one could get to the correction, to the Magnon dispersion relation here at four loops. Yeah, and all this thing and also the four-loop wrapping correction here matches the predictions from the Y system. So the open questions, how could one proceed? I mean, at a certain point, Feynman diagrams will, of course, there is a limit at which one can work. So can we push that limit, and why should we do this? So first of all, is there a more efficient formalism than the n equal 1 supergraphs? And of course, the answer is yes. I mean, the cancellation we still see are due to the reduced supersymmetry in the formulation, so one should find something better. And also, there is an observation that in certain cases, the cubic gauge metavertices that appear in diagrams don't really play a role. So either these diagrams cancel out or they are finite. So there seems to be something else, a mechanism at work, which hints to something more efficient than doing just the Feynman diagrams. And one hopefully good strategy could be to look at the methods of the unitarity methods for the amplitudes and try to apply that in these cases. So then, why should one do this? I mean, very interesting would be the wrapping beyond critical order, as you said before. So, for example, that is, of course, necessary to obtain the full spectrum. And then, if you go to double wrapping, so which means in the simplest case to Konishi at eight loops, then qualitative new types of interactions arise here. So this is something that is really, I mean, not tested at all and would be very nice to test. The question is, can one ever arrive at this point? I mean, it would be very nice. And about the Magnon dispersion relations and this function H square, so is it possible to go to six loop or beyond with supergraphs? Up to now, we have done this in components, but it might be good to go to n equal 2 supergraph language in three dimensions and try the same thing, not only as a check, but also to push it to higher loops and eventually have an idea of what this function could be. And so the question which one would like to answer, of course, is if this h square of lambda can be fixed exactly from first principles, if one has enough data on strong and weak coupling side. So to guess something that could fix this function and then get the asymptotic spectrum. Yeah, and that's it. Thank you very much.
So what do you think about the Y system, which supposedly is the complete answer?
I mean, it's remarkable that it's consistent with everything what is known to wrapping and finite size effects up to now. So it looks very, very promising. The question is, I think the text, the non-trivial, what it has to pass is something beyond this critical order when this double wrapping appears or something. So when
there's double wrapping and there's triple wrapping.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
The number of integers is infinite.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. But for example, Janik said something that at 6 loop and at 8 loops, the expansion of the exponential in the thermodynamic beta ansatz goes to one higher order. So there is really something something new coming in from there. So this is really only the first point in the complete chain, I would say. So it, I mean, since there's something coming new, one should test it if possible against the next step. I mean, yeah.
I have a couple of questions. In the ABJM side, have people done the same thing that Lipatov and company did for the gluons on the right hand side, meaning getting the spin part rather than the flavor?
You mean the
spin on the Have people gotten that spin part, the anomalous dimension?
You mean the twist to the twist operator?
Yeah,
the twist. Yeah, I think there is this. I don't know. I read the paper that was about the cusp anomalous dimension for the ABJM case. That would be exactly this. But I'm sorry, I can't.
Yeah, but there were all these harmonic functions showing up. So it will be running the full calculation with UCD. There's all these harmonic functions showing up. And this
yes.
is how people knew eventually that things were integral because you could tack on to the system.
You mean the BFKL equation has.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not aware of this.
These differences of harmonic functions show up in various places. So has that been done or not?
I think, as far as I know, they have up to now only N equal 4 for the BFKL equation and separability, and these kind of things, which lead to the maximum transcendentality principle, to project the maximum transcendental contributions of the anomalous dimension in as function of spins. This is, I'm not aware of anything in ABJM there. So.
Other questions? Christopher.